We've got our last speaker and then one more panel. It is great to see so much networking and business development taking place.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Great. I think we're probably at critical mass here, so we'll get started. This next presentation is on CHP project development and resources, and features Cliff Hefke. And Cliff has over 15 years of experience in the energy industry, and currently serves as the interim director of the Energy Resources Center, located at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Cliff holds a BS in mechanical engineering and an MBA, both from the University of Illinois at Chicago. Cliff is a member of the International District Energy Association and the U.S. Combined Heat and Power Association, serves on the board of the Midwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, and is president of the Midwest Cogeneration Association. It's exciting to have Cliff here in Michigan for this, and please join me in welcoming Cliff Hefke for the final presentation. Thanks.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity. I am from Chicago, and I drove out here last evening, and I saw some billboards and signs in the rearview mirror. I don't know how many sports fans there are, but there is the NFL draft tonight, right? So we'll find out if the Chicago Bears or Detroit Lions get any better players. And I will say that I'm almost positive that the CHP outlook is much better than the Chicago Bears outlook, so I will admit to that. So I've already conceded, I think. So we're going through restructuring, but just it's exciting. But I think also it's exciting here with what's going on in the CHP industry. We've heard a lot about, actually this whole day so far, of what's transpiring, what's been happening. And we've been talking for, mid-2000s, gas prices skyrocketed, they're volatile, and it really took a big hit on the entire industry nationwide, and especially in the Midwest. We didn't have the spark spread here with high electric prices, such as the East Coast and the West Coast. But since then, we've heard a lot of drivers have taken place. The President's executive order in 2012 with CHP, shale gas, resiliency, a number of different activities going on. And I think also what we're seeing is utilities are getting more engaged. And a recent presentation I gave actually in December and in January showed some of the data and statistics backing, I don't have it in this presentation, but backing up, showing a very flat installation trend across the 12 Midwest states, and also in 2013, 14, 15, and on, you see this big jump in installations going in. And so the data is no longer just talking about these emerging drivers, but they're actually being realized. And if anybody wants some of those presentations, I do have them where I can email them to you. My contact information will be in the last slide here. But it's exciting what's going on. Even Michigan, we have Riotown went in, Washtenaw Community College, what else? Oakland University is putting in a CHP system on Coldwater, Michigan, right? The municipality there is putting in a system and providing heat and CO2 to a greenhouse there. And there's other projects going on too, just in Michigan alone. So we're starting to really see the trend starting to pick up, and it is exciting. So, with my presentation, it's titled CHP Project Development and Resources. My goal here is to really take you through a quick whirlwind tour of, what it takes to put a project in. Fred kind of already went through some of the detailed steps, maybe a feasibility study. I'll be kind of showing up some of the upfront activities and maybe some of the resources that are available through our DOE or through the US DOE programs, and maybe some other resources as well. Just a little bit of background. I am with the University of Illinois Chicago Energy Resources Center, and I'm able to speak today on behalf of this Department of Energy program, and we've actually been running this since 2001 or so. So kind of already talked about what we're going to talk about. Skip through that. So we are one of seven regional centers. You can see in the map here, Michigan is definitely one of the Midwest states that we have. Really three folds of activities we look at: market opportunity analysis, education outreach, and technical assistance. Most of us here in the room, I've looked at the list of who's all in attendance. Many of us know CHP and I think have an inkling of it, but it's all the way from the residential units to small commercial to large industrial, large institutional facilities. So it hits a big spectrum of industries. Education outreach is we try to provide as much as we can unbiased information. Some may have called, or maybe not some of the others, but myself, maybe some of our colleagues that were zealots for CHP. I wouldn't quite say we're zealots, but we're very proactive. We want to make sure that the right projects get out there and make sense. And really, DOE's goal is really to get clean and energy efficient CHP out there where it does make sense. And where it does make sense has a number of benefits. And technical assistance, that could range anywhere from a screening analysis to helping a site walk through some questions, reviewing a study that's been done by others, trying to connect the dots between a potential end user and the industry that's out there. So a number of different activities that we can get involved in. And the education outreach, it's, you know, it could be from talking to a potential end user, to policymakers, to utilities, and we've engaged in several activities. And even speaking of utilities, and that's come up quite a bit in today's conversations, is we're seeing a different trend occurring, too, with some utilities that we're talking about, where the utilities are understanding that distributed generation, CHP technologies, they are coming. It's not when, it's not if, it's when. So they're coming down here. So part of the discussions we're seeing, and we're hearing this from them, is instead of losing a customer, how do I take advantage of the opportunity of them taking load off of my grid? They're going to come in. They're going to take off 5 megawatts, 10 megawatts. We know it's coming. How do we take advantage of that? And some utilities, they're seeing that they're partnering with them in different ways of utility end-user partnerships. Or you're seeing, in terms of energy efficiency portfolio standard programs, that there are incentives being made available for these, and the utilities are able to take the credit for the system going in. So we're seeing some of that discussion occurring. Minnesota is currently going through, have gone through stakeholder processes. Iowa has done that. Illinois, just this last November, they had a public sector program up to $2 million per project, not to exceed 50%. Those in the midst of being awarded. By this summer, there should be a private sector program available through ComEd and jointly between ComEd, electric utility, and the gas utility of Nicor. So we're seeing utilities starting to participate. And I think where I talked about that trend, seeing a flat line, all of a sudden it's spiking up, I believe that's part of the utility is getting really engaged and trying to figure this out together. Just confirming that there is this map, there's the other entities and our counterparts. If you do contact us, get in touch with us, it's not just one entity here in the Midwest, but then if we can't solve the problem ourselves, have the resources, we probably have other folks in the different regions that may have gone through some of the issues or lessons learned we're trying to help solve. So where are the opportunities? This is just looking at the industrial sector in Michigan. On the bottom side here, you maybe can't see that far, but this is megawatt potential. Each line is 100 megawatts. Left-hand side, you have the market sectors there. This information was analyzed by ICF International. They're right now internal estimates. I've heard that a full published report might be coming out later this summer, backed by the Department of Energy. But you can see in Michigan, why are we so excited? There's a lot of opportunities here in terms of megawatt potential. Again, this is technical potential, not economic potential. But you see your transportation industry. You see chemicals, primary metals, paper, food. You see some of those big industries. That's where the opportunities are in terms of the industrial sector. And just to give some perspective, I can't remember quite. Michigan, I think, were about 90 to 100 CHP projects. I think there's about 3.5 gigawatts of CHP installed, but 75 to 80% of that is in two big plants. So there's still a lot of opportunity in the industrial sector. Look at the commercial sector. You see that long bar at the top. We're all the way at 800, so a little over 700 megawatts. That top bar is commercial buildings. Although there's a lot of tactical potential, you got to be careful that you see a number like this. You got to be careful with commercial buildings. There are opportunities there. As we've heard today, it's where your electric and thermal loads. You have consistent or coincidental loads. But you look at really the other facilities, colleges, universities, hospitals, prisons. Those are really your institutional facilities. They're long hours of operation. They really have good electric and thermal loads. So I show this just to say that there are a lot of opportunities here in Michigan, and there's numbers like this around the Midwest, too. And I would say that, the Midwest is really a... It's not as, there's a lot of potential here. when you look at the East and West Coast, very mature industries and due to high spark spreads. But I say there's still a lot of opportunities here in the Midwest that haven't been tapped to their full potential yet. So why should a CHP system be evaluated facility? It's pretty hard to do a blanket coverage of all hospitals, all data centers. All these facilities have different loads, operating schedules, sizes, geographic location makes a difference. Environmental concerns are different, different hurdles in terms of financing. So it's important to evaluate each facility individually, but also put that last bullet is there, know what your client is looking for. Are they just interested in energy savings alone? Are they looking for reliability? Are they looking for environmental impact, sustainability? So really know what your client is looking for, and is it, if they're looking for return on investment, what is that hurdle rate? So we've heard a little bit about this. I want to focus on the left-hand side. Is some of the activities we've heard about the technical aspects of your plant, but on the right-hand side, looking at when does CHP make sense? First you want to make sure that they have a central heating and cooling plant. If they have a distributed facility, if there's such as a hotel, PTEC units in each of the windows, that's going to be very difficult to integrate. So first, having that central heating and cooling facility, but are they looking at any future plant upgrades? That's a key opportunity. Number of plants have done that, especially when they've tried to come off coal, if they're trying to replace a boiler, a chiller, making that incremental upgrade. Why? Take the opportunity to look at it then. Is there a plant expansion occurring or at an industrial site or a hospital? Many of them at times are adding new wings to their hospital. How are they managing their energy systems? Great opportunity to look at that. And we've seen that where even a hospital in the Chicago area maybe 10 years ago, they had kept building wings out, and pretty soon they had, I don't know how many boiler plants on their hospital, but they had distributed systems all over the place. So they'd made the decision to bring everything, consolidate to one plant. It's Northwest Community Hospital in Arlington Heights. It's a good facility because I've been there to be treated, and I was in the emergency room. I told my wife there's a CHP system here, and she said, "You're an idiot." So... So just worry about your health, not that there's CHP here. So it was operating. But just for an example, it was about $10 million to bring the centralized unit. Maybe tacking on the CHP system, they made an extra $1 million, $1.5 million. So they took that opportunity to look at that. Making sure your facility already has the energy efficiency measures implemented. CHP is not a low-hanging fruit technology. Make sure those light bulbs are in. Make sure you have figured out your facility demand before you put this in. Otherwise, you'd put CHP in first, then you do your other energy efficiency measures. You have an oversized system. Your efficiencies are going out of whack, and you're not able to have the most economic system. Other questions are, is there renewable fuels located nearby? And this is a big key, too. Do you have a champion on the inside to help carry these projects through? Again, a lot of benefits, but it does take some push, whether it's on the permitting side, whether it's working with utilities, whether it's working with your board of directors. You need someone who really gets this and really wants to help you carry it through. It's a big key that is often overlooked. You could have the best economical project, and still you don't have someone to carry it over on the inside. Makes sense, a lot of market sectors. I've already talked about this from the industrial side, commercial side, institutional, ag, from the small systems to your large systems. Really looking at those with the long hours of operation, coincidental thermal and electric loads, and whatever other needs they may have that are related to this activity. We've heard a lot about resiliency, critical infrastructure. I won't go through this much, but there's a lot of facilities that are looking at that. You see a lot of it on the East Coast, West Coast. Maybe not as much a play here in the Midwest, but it is there. I'm going to walk a little bit more on the other slide. But I will say, if properly configured, we've heard a little bit about this. For those who don't know, there are CHP systems that are out there that cannot operate independent of the grid, that don't have black start capability. They were put in for economic reasons and others, and they don't have the proper generators and other interconnection equipment there to operate and stand alone. So I want to make sure that for those who don't know, that you don't think that every CHP system, no matter what it is, that it can operate as a backup unit for you or provide your backup power to your facility in case the grid goes out. So, but if they can, it's another benefit to these systems. So What I want to show here on the left-hand side is what is needed to make sure that you can maintain through some of these power interruptions. You want to make sure you have black start capability. Can it start independent of the grid? And also, can your generators, we heard Greg Mulder talk about the inverter-based technologies. You might have a synchronous generator. Can you operate independent of the grid? Is your system able to carry a good portion of the facility? You might have critical loads if you talk about critical infrastructure facilities. When you talk about hospitals, the critical loads are the life safety critical loads, but most hospitals want the entire system covered. So it really depends on different facilities, and is there load shed capabilities on the inside to bring down your loads to make sure a good portion of your plant can operate. Making sure you have the right parallel utility and connection and switch gear controls. So these are some of the equipment that you need on your CHP system to make sure that you can maintain through an outage. On the right-hand side, I just have a few examples of systems that have maybe demonstrated or mitigated what has happened, whether it's a natural disaster, man-made disaster. There's plenty of examples, Superstorm Sandy, we've already heard about, Hurricane Katrina. Maybe when we get to the Midwest, we don't have those storms, but Presbyterian Homes, interesting story there in Evanston, Illinois. I think early 2000s, they had a snowstorm. They had two electric feeds, and this is maybe a drastic example, but they had two electric feeds coming into their nursing home, thinking that, hey, there's my reliability. And they were coming from two different substations, too. That snowstorm knocked out both. And you had a couple hundred residents, so they were out of power for 9 hours. A couple hundred residents had to be transferred elsewhere. The board sat down and said, hey, this cannot happen again. What do we do? They looked at different options. Could we just put in backup generators? And they made the decision to put in natural gas-fired engines. That could be their backup source of power in case the grid goes down. What I think is important to understand, if you can meet codes with this, hospitals, you can't always put in a CHP system, meet codes for certain restrictions. But in this case, you have an opportunity for a return on investment. If you have backup generators, you really don't have your return on investment unless there is an outage. But it's CHP, long hours operation, you're able to get a return on investment. These three systems were all tied to the grid. This one here, Brandon View Building, some of you may know that as the Laclede Gas Building in St. Louis. They've had CHP since 1969, and they made the decision right at that point that they wanted this building totally independent from the grid. Not as many examples of that, but they aren't connected to electric grid at all, but they have maintained operation, I think since the 80s or so. They've had different upgrades, but I think I've read somewhere since the 80s they have not gone offline, or they've maintained their building operation due to their CHP system. So the steps in looking at a CHP project. This is a very basic diagram. On the left-hand side, looking at your screening and preliminary analysis, so trying to identify if there's any red flags that should make you stop looking at this project, or if there's enough green lights to say, hey, go ahead and look at this. But you see this last line here, follow the development or the project development process to help reduce risk later down the road. So don't just jump into a feasibility study right away. Take some time to screen it up front. Second step would be a feasibility analysis. I'll go into these a little bit more in depth. Next would be your investment grade analysis, which that would probably be your stamp PE drawings, take it to the bank to get your investments secured there. And then procurement, operations, maintenance, and commissioning. I'm going to show the same diagram, but I'm going to list some of the services through the Department of Energy that are available at the different steps. And I want to go through these real quickly here. So screening and preliminary analysis, it's a phone call collecting data. At times, this can be done via phone call, so not even going on site, but having a talk, a discussion with the facility folks, understanding the basic parameters. I'm going to show some of the questions that are asked. It's a very simple process. But again, if we can stop right here and say, hey, you have too many red flags, don't go on further looking at this. CHP will not make sense in every application. Let's identify that now instead of moving forward. So feasibility analysis, our organizations can also perform those, looking at savings, installation costs, simple paybacks, understanding more details of the project, definitely including site visits. Investment grade analyses, we do not get involved in that. We may review them. We can review other studies. We can be an unbiased third set of eyes looking at these projects, helping a facility understand the benefits, maybe the issues of CHP. if they are uncomfortable going to maybe the engineering firm that's done this work. And I think also part of our role is to maybe help start this, help bounce ideas off, but we really want to turn it over to the industry as well and just get these projects underway and make sure they're good projects going in. And then on the operations maintenance, we have limited input into that part, but we can review different aspects of a project. If maybe reviewing economics, maybe it's not running properly, we can also look at that as well. So yeah, use us as a resource. We do have folks on hand, and it is complimentary services. So looking at the qualification process, I've talked about this, really go, no-go decision, not on if the project should move forward, but really should it be analyzed or not. It's really a quantitative screening analysis done, so looking at really a spark spread, looking at your gas prices, electric prices, getting a basic idea of your system size, putting those numbers in, crunching them in, and then a qualitative screening with some questions on there. If you want more information, it is available here. Some of the questions, just very basic to some, but on the other side, it can help understand a lot. How much are you paying for electricity? Are you worried about future energy prices? So even though energy prices might be okay today, what has your utility told you over the next 2-3 years where your energy prices might be, both on the gas and the electric side? Is reliability a concern? Are you maintaining a good number of hours of operation? This is a big one. Do you have thermal loads? Some of these are basic questions, but they can really tell a big story here. Do you have an existing central plant? Again, talking about this question, are you going to be retrofitting your HVAC plant, your central boiler plant? Do you have expansions there? Have you already implemented energy efficiency measures, environmental questions, and biomass resources? This is very basic, very preliminary, but answering yes to 3 or more of these, let's continue the discussions. So we look at a feasibility analysis. This is where you're getting a little more in depth here. Could be an hour-by-hour analysis, could be a monthly load profiling analysis, but really getting into the weeds of it, getting more details. This is something we can do. We can help review these studies as well, but really getting a more in-depth look at this and getting the numbers shored up. I don't want to give a plus or minus here, but you really have a good understanding if this does make sense or not at this point. Some information you might be gathering to complete a feasibility studies. I know Fred talked about this quite a bit too, but you know, getting your utility bills, both electric and gas, or if it's another fuel. If you have steam data, very useful if you have steam at your site. Understanding the process loads, the schedules of operation, when are folks using the facility, when are they in there, what type of equipment is already existing in there in terms of boilers, chillers, what are the efficiencies, what type of energy measures are you looking at, competing against, and trying to make this make sense. Electric parameters, this is very important. Looking into the interconnection, how many service drops do you have there? Where is the distance and location between the boiler plant, where the future site might be of this project? How many feeds do you have coming into your facility? Permitting questions, are you in a not a residential area, but that Presbyterian Homes I talked about, they had to make sure there's a nice brick building around that because that nursing home was in the middle of a residential area. So, site. Industrial plant, probably not as needed, but if you're in a commercial industry, probably yes. If there's vibration, noise concerns. What type of facility is it? What are they eligible for? If they're maybe a public sector facility, probably can't take advantage of investment tax credits unless you're working with a third-party developer. So here is a link here for some more information on the walkthrough checklist. It's 5-6 pages, but really trying to help you gather the basic information for a feasibility study. So as I mentioned, we do get involved with reviewing projects as well. Again, trying to provide that third set of eyes looking at this, whether it's a feasibility study, looking at design specifications, equipment sizing and selection. You got gas turbines, you got engines, you got microturbines, maybe fuel cells, steam turbines. There's been a lot of examples of that, and there's different applications for different projects. Some of them overlap, and you could pick between two different technologies. Some is pretty clear why it should be one or another, or if you should have redundancy built in. So we would shed light on that. Balance of plant, making sure you're looking at all the ancillary equipment that needs to go into this. That is often over can be overlooked in some projects. And then utility and connection studies as well. I think I only got a couple more left here. So at the procurement, operations, maintenance, commissioning, we have helped in the past put together RFPs. We've helped review RFPs, providing some guidance on what to look for there. So that's definitely something we can help on. Looking at specifications and bids, some of these other activities here that we can get involved in. So we can be a resource for you that is available. So here is early on trying to identify and work through some of these issues, maybe up front. Is one is permitting, making sure that could be take long lead time, and that can hold up some of the project development from occurring for a little while, but make sure that start early. And working with the utilities, both on the electric and gas. There was a question asked earlier about the project in UP. Is there enough gas supply coming? Is that even available? That is a question. When you get some of these bigger projects, although it can make definite sense on a tactical and financial side, but if you've ignored that gas supply, if there's enough available, that could be a deal breaker too. An electric side is talking to the electric utility, talking to them about your project and you know, trying to identify what are some of the barriers that may occur. A couple resources that are published by the Department of Energy. One is this top one. There has been an installation database that has been out there. This is the same tool, but now you can download it in spreadsheet format. You can download an entire spreadsheet of all, I can't remember now, 4,000 facilities in the U.S. Where there is CHP, 83 total gigawatts. If you get it on your spreadsheet, you can sort it by fuel type, by system size, by year of operation. A lot of different information you look up there, you know, by state, by sector. If you want to see where all the CHP systems in hospitals, where all the CHP systems in prisons, go to this, use it. And then here are a number of two-page case studies, project profiles that have been developed by the different Department of Energy entities. If you are interested in trying to get one of your projects written up, I would like to work with you, especially in the Midwest. If it's outside the Midwest, we can connect you with one of the other regional centers. All right, and then, so just summarizing, CHP projects can be very involved. But although they can be very involved, they can have a number of benefits too. And I think that's why we're all here at this workshop, because there is a lot of opportunities and benefits to both to end users, to societal benefits, to a number of different entities. Following that project development process can help reduce risk down the road. So, you know, let's try to identify those risk opportunities right up front, make some of those decisions down the line. Know what your client is looking for. There are resources available, and we'd love to talk more about CHP. Bounce ideas off, look at different opportunities, whether you're a utility, whether you're a state energy office, end user, project developer. We try to help bring the community together here. So with that, I appreciate your time. Good luck to your Detroit Lions and draft night tonight. CHP is better than the Chicago Bears, I will say that. So, but I think that's it, and any questions?
No questions? Oh, Fred.
I have just a comment. You talked about using the cogen system as emergency backup.
Basically, having power available on site if there's a grid interruption.
And if that sector can be code.
Sure. In 2008, we put in a 5-megawatt cogen system at the Rio Casino in Las Vegas. And one of our concerns was reliability of utility supply as well as efficiency savings. The system was set up so that it paralleled with the electric utilities, so if the utility crashed, if we crashed, there was instant backup from the utility. If they crashed, we had load shedding, so that we took on critical loads in the complex but dumped anything that the standby generators could pick up after a 10-second gap. For a casino, critical loads include security cameras, casino gambling areas, air conditioning, and the big signs in the front door, okay? Secondary loads are elevators, kitchens, lighting in the rooms, things like that, okay? Because the big money is in the gambling house. If they lost power for a weekend, that's a $2 million loss in profit to them. This cogen was set up to save about $1 million in energy savings a year. So security supply is critical. So New Year's Eve, after our unit came online, everybody was partying in Las Vegas. The Palms Hotel is a sort of catty corner across the street from the Rio. And there was a big bash going on in the bar on the top floor. Somebody dropped something off the top of that building into the Nevada Power substation. It shorted out and took out three blocks square, including all of the Palms, the Orleans Casino, two smaller casinos, and the property that the Rio sits on. But the Rio was operating with its cogen system, and so the casinos stayed lit, the crowds were happy, the signs stayed on, and they were happy as a clam. This project, by the way, got your Energy Star Award Project of the Year for 2008. No, but some of them do.
No, there's a market that we're seeing with that, yeah. Gonna go to a casino tour, right? That's just kind of maybe I shouldn't even say this, but we have looking at market sectors. You have hospitals, a great one, chemical industry, and we were talking about food processing. And then when someone learned that the breweries are part of the food processing, we had one of our staff jump on that market sector right away. So I'm gonna check out every brewery in the Midwest to make sure that they have CHP. So yeah,
so
that's right. So any other questions? All right, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cliff. That was fantastic.